We're going to move around a little bit, but we're going to start out in the book of Psalms, chapter 42. If you wanted to go ahead and turn, go right ahead. So Brother Howard prayed for the folks in Ukraine, and that situation is pretty dire. But there's always been good and evil. Evil started with Satan, and he was in heaven and decided he was beautiful and wanted to be equal with God. He wanted more than what he had, and he had a lot. He was right up there in heaven. And I guess evil always wants more than what it's got. It's like a parasite. It just kind of spreads and consumes what it can. It tries to consume our lives. Sometimes I feel like feel like I've been run through the wringer lately, and it's just part of it. It tries to consume. It tries to defeat. There's always been good and evil. And I'll tell you, it's important. It's really important that a righteous nation shows strength. The United States is the most powerful nation in the world. We've got the strongest, most advanced military. And if we did not have what we do have, and we've got plenty, believe me, if we did not have it to deter the evil of the world, it'd be a lot worse. Sometimes there's movement on the other side of the world, and we might send some assets to, let's just say, we might send them to Guam, and not intending to use them, but just to show that, hey, we saw you and we're moving. And it puts that evil at bay and quietens it down for a little while. So we're in a position right now with this world where the United States has to step up and we have to show our strength. And we're also in a position where the church has to step up and show our strength. A righteous church also has to show strength to keep evil at bay. We've been very quiet for a long time. And there's been a movement across America that is squashing our voice, and it shouldn't be so. It doesn't mean we've got to get violent. It doesn't mean we've got to get out of hand. But we've got to take our stand because our voice has been muted. Our voice has been canceled to a large degree. And we need to get back into the place to where our voice is showing strength and is pushing evil out of our government. So that has nothing to do with my lesson tonight, but it did feel good to say. I'll tell you, God's been good to me. He's been real good to me. We are nothing without Him. I've already graduated from the school of thinks too much of myself. I don't know if any of y'all have ever gone to that school. Kind of thought real high of yourself and find out, well, you're not all that. Well, you probably aren't. But you know what? With God, we can do anything. And it's all God in every situation. Any good that's worked out in our situation, it's all God. So tonight I want to think about and talk about one word. I've got a simple message tonight, and it'll probably even be a short one, but it's definitely a simple thought. But it's a thought that I think is very relevant. Hopefully it's relevant to you. The thought of one word, thirst. The feeling of thirst. So I did, I did some research. I was thinking about this word thirst. And if you look it up, there's a lot of thoughts around thirst. And there's a lot of medical information. And did you know that if your blood has all kind of chemicals in it. And if your blood gets low of electrolytes, your body gets low of electrolytes, it starts to send signals to your brain and it causes you to want to drink. It means you're thirsty. You want to replenish those fluids in your body. I thought, well, that's pretty technical. I don't know about that, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not really close to medical things. But the more I read and kind of got into the word thirst, the thing that kind of resonated with me the most, the definition that resonated the most was this. Thirst leads to drinking. Just that simple. Thirst leads to drinking. Just let that thought sit in your head, if you will. Most of us are here tonight because our soul became thirsty at some point. Our soul needed something. Our soul was sending a signal that it was thirsty and it needed to be quenched. I specifically remember when I became drawn. When I became drawn to be a Christian, I remember when I became drawn to come to this ministry, it was a supernatural drawing. It wasn't something I could excuse or dismiss or get over. It had to happen. That thirst had to be quenched. Thirst is something that is uncomfortable. If it were comfortable, then we would just sit in it. Thirst is uncomfortable. It's a discomfort that has to be satisfied. So there are two types of thirst. At least there may be more, but my small mind thought of two. There's this thirst that we think of that is like a maintenance thirst. You know, you sit down for dinner, you have something to drink with your dinner. Maybe throughout the day you might sip a drink, coffee, tea, water, whatever. That's your day-to-day maintenance thirst. And then there's also this urgent thirst. This thirst of you know, working. I don't know if you have y'all ever worked out in a, like a hot hay field or a chicken house or something that's just really drained you and the air is dry and it's just sucking everything out of you and you just got to get something to drink. And when you do drink, when you do start to satisfy that thirst, it's one of those where you don't care if it runs off your face and down your body and you're just gulping, you know, sound like a little kid just with big gulps. That's a thirst that's urgent and needful and immediate. And your body is desiring that thirst. I'd say that a lot of us tonight are probably sitting in this church and we're probably coming to church a few times a week and we're in a maintenance thirst mode. I'd say after the years have passed and, you know, we may have moments of urgent thirst, but for the most part, most of us spend most of our lives in a maintenance thirst for God. A maintenance thirst for God. But remember, there are people out there that have been out in the world and they're in a bad place and they don't know. They don't know about this. And that drawing is still there for them. And there are still people showing up with an urgent thirst. And we have to keep this place ready to satisfy those folks with an urgent thirst. Because I remember when I had an urgent thirst, a famished thirst, and my life was restored. If y'all will look in the book of Psalms, chapter 42, verse 1, and it says, "And the hearth panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God?" So this passage was written by an exiled writer. And this writer was a descendant of Korah. And he was a singer in the temple. And he longed to get back to the temple. He was thirsting for that environment. See, his soul was famished for God and the temple like a deer after a long drought. Or a deer that had been chased into the woods and finally found a place to where the deer could rest and get a drink from the brook. That's an urgent thirst. You know, even the water from the brook, even the water below comes from above. Y'all hear angels singing? I hear that. A little rising of the... They're good. Even the water below comes from above. I have a branch that runs by my house, and it's called a wet water spring. There's one that it meets that's always had water in it. But this one that kind of runs next to my house, it only sometimes has water in it. And the thing about it is, it only has water in it when the ground is saturated. And the ground becomes saturated, and it bubbles up into that spring. One time, I noticed, wow, this thing has water in it. I'm going to go find the source. And I walked up, you know, from where I could see water, and I kept going, and I kept going. And it just seemed like it just got wetter and wetter, but there wasn't like a source bubbling up. It was just like all the water just kind of finally gathered and decided to run. And I thought, well, you know, that water, it had been raining, and it had been raining for weeks, and the rain had saturated the ground and had saturated the ground in the hills. And I studied that a little bit more, and what happens is the water goes into the ground, And it'll seep into the ground until it hits some hard clay or a rock shelf or something. And then it'll follow that shelf until it finally comes out into a place where it can flow. And that's called a wet water spring. But even the water, even the water that comes from below started above. God's Spirit that's going to flow in our lives is going to come from all around us. And it's going to saturate us until it comes out. This branch, this wet water spring, is kind of like the one that Brother Ken preached about this Sunday morning with Elijah by the brook Cherith. That was a wet water spring. And I found it strange that during a drought where there wasn't any water, where there wasn't saturation for a wet water spring to work, God sent Elijah to that spring to get sustenance. And as Brother Ken said, he brought bread by the ravens, probably off the king's table. I like that. I think that's about right. That makes sense to me, because who else was putting their bread out in the open for ravens? And the ravens didn't cook the bread. They didn't need the dough. That didn't happen. So they had to get it from someone who had plenty. I like that. I like the fact that God can use evil, and God can use bad things that are intended. The food that was intended to strengthen the king and his wife that was after Elijah was sent to Elijah. I have to, it makes me wonder sometimes. All that Elijah had been through and all that he had accomplished and the fact that he ended up under a juniper tree and he ended up hiding and he ended up in a place that was very low. All that he had done and all the mighty works he'd seen, it's amazing to me that he could go from a place to seeing God do tremendous things through him. I'm talking about wetting down an altar multiple times, digging a moat and pouring water into it, and then God calling fire out of heaven to burn up the offering. The same Elijah that saw that power and tapped into that power, the same one that went to the king and said, it's not going to rain because God said it wasn't, and delivered that message, could get to a place where he was so low that he just wanted to die. So where is my faith to trust God's hand? Why do I allow myself to get discouraged after all God has done and shown just for me? Just for me. The things that I've personally experienced. How do I get in a place? Why don't I trust after all the years of supply that the supply, is available? The supply will be there. Sometimes you just get so anxious in life, right? You think something's wrong. Something's going to be wrong. Something's going to go wrong. It's amazing to me that we can have so much blessing from God and yet lose our faith so easily. Do we only trust when the thirst is urgent? Or can we also trust during the maintenance times of thirst? Can we only conjure up trust for God when there's really bad things going on and we've just got to get a hold of God? Or can we trust God in our day-to-day to do the mundane things, to do the normal things, to do the daily maintenance in our lives? I think he's good in the urgent things, and he's also good in the maintenance things. So we'll never explain God, but if we let him, he will take care of us. His plan for us is based on faith and not on sight. Most of the world has no desire and no thirst for the things of God. So we get a dehydrated society. A weak and dehydrated. We miss the water that purifies and cleanses us. And we've never been so connected. We've never had so much ability to reach out and know about each other and share information with each other. But we've never been so lonely and disconnected in the same. Sometimes we miss the blessing of God. And we miss the blessing of God in a dehydrated situation. If y'all will turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 5 and verse 6. This is a powerful verse. Matthew 5 and 6 says, "Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Now, there's something about this word shall. If there are any engineers in here or anybody that's ever had to deal with engineer drawings and construction or whatever, there's this term in my business making you know, machines, big machines. There's this word shall. It means something. If it shows up on an engineering drawing, it means it has to be that way. That dimension shall be that. This material shall be that. This thickness shall be that. That torque value shall be that. And if it's not, the thing will be coming down. It will not work. So to me, through my training, it's a declaration of certainty. It shall be. So let's read that verse again. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. It's not they could be filled, or they might be filled, or some of them get filled. It's they shall be filled. This thing about thirst, if we seek Christ and we seek the things of God, He will fill us. It will be weird for our kids to come to us and say, I'm hungry, Dad. I'm hungry, Mom. And us to say, you don't look hungry enough yet. You probably don't really need that. Well, if they come and ask me, I'm going to get it for them. And if I don't have it to give, I'm going to find it. And if I don't have means to give, I'm going to still find it. I'm going to make it happen. So if I'm seeking the things of God, I think He, and it says here, He shall fill me, I think He would say yes to that seeking. God will always give more than we bargain for. I know He has. I know He has in my life. So this passage, let's go to John 13. We'll go to verse 7. John 13, 7. We'll look at some more about this water and about this thirst. John 13, 7, it says, "There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. Verse 8, for his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Verse 10, Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." That's right. Living water was different than what she was used to. She was still talking in terms of what was in the well. And Jesus was on a whole different level. He was on a whole different plane. He was talking something totally different. And a lot of times we're that way. We're talking to God about what we think we got going on in our lives. And he's in a totally different place trying to communicate with us. Something more meaningful. Verse 11, it says, "The woman said unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle?" So she's trying to figure out who this guy is. Are you greater than Jacob? Well, I'd say yes, there is none greater than Christ. Most of us agree to that, but we don't all act like it. And most of us don't act like it all the time. We think we're something most of the time. Verse 13, Jesus answered and said to her, "Whosoever drinketh of the water of this water shall thirst again." Verse 14, "But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up unto everlasting life." See, Jesus is the only one that can offer eternal life. He was not just a great prophet. He was not just a great storyteller. He was not just a charismatic leader. He was the God-man. He said, "I am that I am." He claimed to be God. He was God. If you've ever read Mere Christianity, Jenna's been reading that. it talks about in there, he had to be one of three things. And I've shared this before. He had to either be a liar, he had to either be a lunatic, or he had to be Lord. He could only be one of those three things. But he claimed to be the Son of God. He claimed to be equal with God. So I choose Lord. So Jesus is the only one that can offer eternal life. He is my salvation. But to receive it, there must be a thirst. No man comes unless he is what? He is drawn. Brother Ken can see my notes. If God is drawing, don't fight. Thirst leads to drinking. Sometimes we make salvation so complicated. We get so confused about salvation. Satan can put so much pressure on us about anxiety around our salvation. Satan loves to get in our brains and try to convince us that what we have isn't real, or we didn't do it right, or we didn't say the right words, or we didn't move the right way. Listen, if salvation was based on us knowing this book from cover to cover and knowing the ins and outs of all the theology that we should know, if you had to have any degree of that, then how much would it take? Is this enough? Is this enough? Is that enough? When is it enough? It's simple. Thirst leads to drinking. Drawing, there's a drawing and there's a gesture. I'm drawn and I say yes. Yes doesn't have to be the word yes. Yes can be a movement toward. Yes can be any number of motions. But there has to be a drawing and there has to be an acknowledgement. There has to be a movement toward Christ. It is that simple. Thirst leads to drinking. I was 11 years old when I was saved. I hadn't been in church much. I didn't know much. But I did know that I was being drawn. And I did know that I moved. If you got a Bible that says different, I'd love to sit down with you. Let's go to the book of Matthew, chapter 19. Matthew 19, 16 is where we'll start. There's something about drinking. Thirst leads to drinking. You know who doesn't get thirsty? You know who doesn't thirst? People who are already full. We can be full of ourselves. We can be full of pride. We can be full of self-reliance. We can be full of anger. Amen. I can be full of anger. We can be full of shame. We can be full of guilt. We can be full of regret. We can be full of self-loathing and lack of worth. We can be full of a lot of things, but we have to thirst to receive Christ. We can sometimes be full of our reputation. Matthew 19, verse 16. And behold, one came and said unto him, Good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? And he said unto him, Why callest thou me good? You know, who do you think you're talking to? There is none good but one, that is God. But if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. He saith unto him, Which? Jesus said, Well, thou shalt do no murder. I mean, these are the commandments, right? Thou shalt do no murder. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Honor thy father and thy mother. And thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So Jesus just said, okay, you're quizzing me about what it takes. If you're looking to be qualified, here are the commandments. Let me just hold this mirror up. And how do you look in this mirror? How do you look in this law? How do you look against these commandments? Let's find out. Let's look in the mirror and let's find out if this young man was thirsty. So he said, the young man said to him, "All these things I have kept from my youth. What lack I yet?" So he said, "Well, I'm covered. I haven't done any of those things. Well, what else you got to say, Jesus?" He said, "I'm good, and there is no thirst here." In verse 21, Jesus said unto him, "If thou wilt be perfect," okay, you're asking, you're saying you're perfect, but if you really want to be perfect, "go and sell that thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me." But when the young man heard the saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. If he had been like the heart, if he'd been like the deer in the drought, he'd have been willing to sell every bit of it. He'd have been willing to drop it all and say, "I don't care, this isn't satisfying my thirst. I've got to get this thirst satisfied. Whatever you say, I will do it." You remember someone in the Old Testament named Abraham? He was told, "Go and sacrifice your son Isaac." And Abraham was so committed to God, and he so believed God, and he so believed that God's way was right, that he set out to sacrifice his child. He wasn't required to do it in the end. But God wasn't looking for the sacrifice. He was looking for the obedience. If this young ruler had said, "Where you want it? What ditch you want me to dump it in?" Jesus may have said, "Hey, keep that. That stuff's not hurting you now. Let's take care of your soul, because you've shown that you're thirsty and you're saying yes." Instead, he showed that he wasn't thirsty and that those things meant more to him than what God had for him. So in verse 23, Jesus said unto his disciples, "Verily, I say unto you that a rich man shall hardly enter into the kingdom of heaven. And I say unto you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven." Now, I won't spend too much time on that rich stuff, and I know a lot of people think rich is evil, but I'll just say this. People who have means sometimes think their world is satisfied. And I believe, and I'm not a Bible scholar, but I believe that self-satisfaction and that self-reliance is what makes it hard for a rich man to get to heaven, because they're dependent on themselves. And nobody can get to heaven dependent on themselves. Rich or poor, wealthy or pauper, there's a thirst and there's an obedience to that thirst. Whether you're dragging bags of money with you or you're dragging a couple of sticks like a widow woman, there's a way to heaven for everybody. But it's the same way. It's the same way. So we've been talking about thirst. You know, and there's another example about this urgent thirst that when I was a kid, I still have a little bit of like exercise-induced asthma. But when I was a kid, I had like full-blown asthma. If I got around some flowers or some roses, or I remember one time we were looking at some roses with a neighbor and my whole throat locked down, it got real serious. And I'll tell you, there's one thing that becomes really urgent when your throat closes up and you can't breathe. The next breath. That next breath of air. I kind of compare this urgent thirst to the need to be able to breathe. If you've ever been around anybody with an asthma attack or ever had one, it's a pretty serious situation. And nothing matters more than getting that next breath. That's the way it is when God moves on the sinner and initiates that thirst, initiates that desire. You'll walk through flames, you'll walk through walls, you'll drop your wealth, you'll drop your pride, you'll drop your reputation, you'll drop whatever's necessary to get that thirst fulfilled. Okay, well, thank you for your attention this evening. I appreciate you. And that is all I have.